Today, we will be discussing from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, specifically verse number 26. Canto 3 of Srimad Bhagavatam is titled as Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu. Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu. Verse 26 goes as follows. Pumsam, of the human being, Svakamaya, according to the desire, Vivikta Margai, by the path of devotional service, Abhyarchatam, worshipped, Kama Dukha Angri Padmam, the lotus feet of the Lord, which can award all desired fruits, Pradarshayantam, while showing them, Kripaya, by causeless mercy, Nakha, nails, Indu, moon-like, Mayukha, rays, Bhinna, divided, Anguli, figures, Charupatram, very beautiful. Translation. The Lord showed His lotus feet by raising them. The Lord showed His lotus feet by raising them. His lotus feet are the source of all awards achieved by devotional service free from material contamination. His lotus feet are the source of all awards achieved by devotional service, but which is free from material contamination. Such awards are for those who worship Him in pure devotion. Such awards are for those who worship Him but in pure devotion. The splendor of the transcendental rays from His moon-like toenails and fingernails appeared like the petals of a flower. The splendor of the transcendental rays from His moon-like toenails and fingernails appeared like the petals of a flower. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Lord fulfills the desires of everyone just as one desires. He fulfills the desires of everyone, but just as one desires. Pure devotees are interested in achieving the transcendental service of the Lord, which is non-different from Him. Therefore, the Lord is the only desire of the pure devotees. Therefore, the Lord is the only desire of the pure devotees, and devotional service is the only spotless process for achieving His favor. Srila Rupa Goswami says in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11, he says that pure devotional service is jnana karmadi anavritam. Pure devotional service is without any tinge of speculative knowledge and fruitive activities. Such devotional service is able to award the pure devotee the highest result, namely direct association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. According to the Gopal Tapani Upanishad, the Lord showed one of the many thousands of petals of His lotus feet. It is said, Brahmano asav anavaratam me ध्यातः स्तुतः परार्धन्ते सो भुद्यथो गोपवेशो मे पुरास्तात् आविर्भभूव. इट इज सेड आफ्टर पेनिट्रेटिंग फॉर मिलियंस ऑफ इयर्स लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा कुड अंडरस्टैंड द ट्रांसेंडेंटल फॉर्म ऑफ द लॉर्ड एज श्री कृष्ण. After penetrating for millions of years, Lord Brahma could understand the transcendental form of the Lord as Sri Krishna in the dress of a cowherd boy, and thus he recorded his experience in the Brahma Samhita in the famous prayer Govindam Adi Purusham Tam Aham Bhajami. ओम अज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं मुखां करोति वचलं पंगुं लंगायते गिरिं यत्कृपा तमहं वंदे श्रीगुरु दिनतारिणं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद. हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्. नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके पुंसां स्वकामाय विविक्तमार्गाय अभ्यार्चतां कामदुभांग्रि पद्मं प्रदर्शयन्तं कृपया नखेन्दु मयूख भिन्नांगुलि चारुपत्रं. द लॉर्ड शोड हिज लोटस फीट बाय रेजिंग देम. हिज लोटस फीट आर द सोर्स ऑफ ऑल अवार्ड्स अचीव्ड बाय डिवोशनल सर्विस free from material contamination. Such awards are for those who worship him in pure devotion. The splendor of the transcendental rays from the moonlight, from his moonlike toenails and fingernails appeared like the petals of a flower. So this is the third canto, chapter 8, which is titled as Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu. So before we begin today's verse, let us quickly discuss what is the context that is happening in the Srimad Bhagavatam which has led to the verse that we are hearing today. Because not all of us are able to attend Bhagavatam on the weekdays. So very quick context. So this is a conversation which is happening between two exalted Vaishnavas. Who are those? Maitreya Muni and Vidura. So they are both exalted Vaishnavas, and this is Krishna Katha, which is happening between both of them. Vidura had left his home and he was on pilgrimage. Along the way he met Uddhava, and Uddhava advised him to meet Maitreya Muni and hear about Lord Krishna. So that conversation is happening right now. So up until now, especially in the earlier chapter, Vidura had asked Maitreya Muni to enlighten him on so many things, but amongst those so many things, he had asked him to enlighten him also on Sarga and Visarga. Sarga is the primary creation and Visarga is secondary creation. So Vidura had asked Maitreya Muni to enlighten him in these two subject matters. And there are many learnings that come out of this discussion for all of us. We must understand that though Vidura, actually Sarga and Visarga is more of a metaphysical aspect of bhakti. It's more of a metaphysical discussion on Srimad Bhagavatam. Ultimately, the Srimad Bhagavatam culminates in the mellows offered by the 10th canto. So topics like Sarga and Visarga are more metaphysical in nature. But why is Vidura asking metaphysical questions to Maitreya Muni to begin with? So we have to understand that Vidura was a pure devotee, no doubt about that. But he wanted to genuinely appreciate how the Lord is the creator as well as separate and aloof from his creation. So he wants to bring out that aspect of the Lord. So in this conversation that is being brought out very nicely. Because this conversation ultimately is leading to the Chatushloki of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where all these details are explained as to how the Lord is within as well as without his creation. So how is he simultaneously the cause of this creation as well as how is he able to be disconnected or aloof from his creation? So Vidura, having asked this question of Maitreya Muni now starts answering this question. However, Maitreya Muni is not simply answering his question as soon as he has asked. Maitreya Muni is showing Vaishnava etiquette. He begins by passing on the glories of whatever he has learnt to his seniors in bhakti. This is a very important aspect. So he's passing on the glories. He says that whatever I am going to speak to you now is nothing but whatever I learnt from my seniors in devotional service. And this is, so here Maitreya Muni is leading by example. Sometimes when we come to Krishna consciousness and we become more and more recognized in Krishna consciousness, or we start thinking of ourselves as now senior devotees, then we sometimes forget our roots in dealing with devotees. So Maitreya Muni is reminding us here that whatever we speak, we must always remember that we have learnt it from the senior devotees. And whenever we speak, we must pass on the glories, if not very openly, at least within our mind. Wherever we can, we must pass it openly. But in specific situations, then at least we internally are very grateful and we express our gratitude within our hearts to the disciplic succession, without which we can't speak whatever we are being empowered to. So he begins by saying that this knowledge has originally come from Lord Sankarshan, who is seated at the bottom of the universe. Now, once upon a time, as Lord Sankarshana was sitting there, the sages from the higher realms, higher planets, came down to seek knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam from him. The sages were headed by Sanat Kumara, who was the principal sage out of the four Kumaras, as well as the head of all the sages. So this knowledge was originally spoken by Lord Sankarshan personally to the Kumaras and the sages there. Sanat Kumara then spoke this knowledge to Sankhyayana Muni. Sankhyayana Muni then gave this knowledge to Parashara Muni, and Parashara Muni then gave this knowledge to Brihaspati. On the advice of Pulastya Muni, Brihaspati then spoke this knowledge to Maitreya Muni. So through that lineage, then it has come. It's not very important to remember all these names, but it is more important to understand the fact and remember that knowledge comes through disciplic succession. And having quoted all this lineage, then Maitreya Muni is answering Vidura, saying that now I am speaking to you whatever I learned from all these devotees. So that is his mood. So that is learning number one. Not to forget the parampara. The other learning is that he is giving credit to this parampara very explicitly to Maitreya Muni. To Vidura. So the context is that there is a partial disillusion that has happened. In his narration, he is talking about a partial disillusion which has happened, wherein now what is only left is the subtle aspects of the material creation, which is resting within the body of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, who is lying on Anantashesh at the very bottom. It is mentioned that as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu was resting, the sum total of all the fruitive activity of this material world took shape in the form of a lotus flower which shot out from his navel. Sum total of all the fruitive activities came out. Because at the end of the day, this material world has been created because the jiva, the soul, has desired to enjoy separately from Krishna. And that enjoyment is called as fruitive activity. So, the stem is coming, has already come out of the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And on top of the stem, who has appeared? Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, who is the personality of Vedic wisdom, as described in this section. He has appeared here. So this is another learning that we have, that many times we think that Lord Brahma is the creator, but we have to understand that he is only the secondary creator, not the primary creator. Also, sometimes Lord Brahma is referred to as Swayambhu. Swayambhu means what? One who is self-born. But we have to understand that he is referred to as self-born only because he does not have a material father. That is why he is referred to as self-born. So when we study Srimad Bhagavatam, we do understand that Lord Brahma is not the cause of his own appearance. It is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu through whom Lord Brahma appears. Now Lord Brahma is sitting in the lotus flower. He has appeared now. He is the personality of Vedic wisdom, it is mentioned. Now even such a personality sitting on the lotus flower is confused about why he is sitting on the lotus flower and what is he supposed to do. He is the personality of Vedic wisdom. Still he doesn't know. Right? So Lord Brahma is wondering, why am I here? Where is my source? So he sees that the stem is there. So he decides to travel to find out and see this supreme source. And he undertakes this journey, and it is mentioned how many millions of years pass, you know, in this journey. But then finally, after all this journey, he gives up because he still can't see the source. He still cannot see the Lord. So therefore, he comes all the way back to the lotus flower, and this time, instead of trying to understand the Lord through astral travel, which Prabhupada many times condemns, you know, saying that we cannot understand the Lord by sending spaceships. Prabhupada uses Sputnik, because Sputnik or Sputnik, whatever you call it, that was the space rocket which was used earlier. So Prabhupada says you can't understand Lord. You may go little bit outside into space and you have to come back after that. Unless sometimes people don't even come back. So we can't understand the Lord through astral travel. So Brahma also could not understand. So what is it? And Brahma traveled for millions of years. Our spaceships may travel maximum for 1 year, 2 years, 30 years, right? So we can't understand the Lord like that. So the key learning here is Brahma came on top of the, he sat on the lotus flower and he did intense meditation in the mood of sincere, humble service to the Lord. And because he meditated on the Lord in that mood, then the Lord manifest himself in his heart and gave him the entire darshan of himself as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. This is what is mentioned in the previous sections. And then the beauty of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, this darshan which he is getting, is also mentioned here. Part of which is also mentioned in this verse. The splendor of the transcendental rays from his moon-like toenails and fingernails appeared like the petals of a flower. So, the Lord manifests himself within the heart of Lord Brahma and gave him all the knowledge that he now needed for the secondary creation, which is Visarga. Not only that, but the Lord also gives him the darshan of his lotus feet in this verse. If you see the first part of the verse, the Lord showed his lotus feet by raising them. Now, Prabhupada, this translation is very interesting and the purport is also very interesting. If you read the translation a little bit more meticulously, there are so many things which come out. It is mentioned, his lotus feet are the source of all awards achieved by devotional service. So, which means, darshan of the Lord is an award for our devotional service. Darshan of the Lord is also a process, in one sense, because seeing the deities, like we read in Ambarish Maharaja's section, that seeing the deities is the process of bhakti. But then the Lord himself giving us his darshan in the way he gave it to Lord Brahma is an award of that process of bhakti. By taking darshan of the Archavigraha, by following the process of bhakti, eventually we will get darshan of the Lord in his pristine form. So, it is mentioned that he is the source of all awards. But, it is also mentioned that such awards are for those who worship him in pure devotion. It is not mentioned that such awards for those are for those who are worshipping him in devotion. The word pure devotion is very important. So, unless there is pure devotion, then such a darshan is not possible, even in millions of lifetimes. So, this verse in one sense contains the Prayojana Tattva, which is the goal of all our bhakti, which is attaining the lotus feet of the Lord. As well as it talks about the Abhideya. Abhideya is the process. And what is the process? The process is mentioned again in this verse. The process is, it is achieved by devotional service, but which is free from material contamination. Devotional service has to be free from material contamination. When we follow that kind of devotional service, then we can achieve that prayojana, which is seeing the lotus feet of the Lord, which is the goal. And when devotional service is free from such material contamination, the Lord sees the sincerity of the devotee, sees the sincere struggle of the devotee, and then he awards the devotee for his sincerity with his darshan. So in Bhagavad Gita 7.3, the Lord mentions, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye, yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvatah. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And those who have achieved perfection, or amongst those, hardly one knows me in truth. In this material world, the Lord is saying that most of us are endeavoring for sense enjoyment, either gross sense enjoyment or subtle sense enjoyment. Most of mankind is behind that. So, in this rat race, someone who is seeking something which is transcendental or above the mundane, such a person itself is very rare. So, devotees are very, even practicing devotees, what we call as Vaishnava Abhas. How many Vaishnava Abhas are there? If you divide the number of people who are Vaishnava Abhas divided by the human population, still it is a very minuscule, negligible number. Forget about Vaishnava Abhas. Here, Srila Prabhupada is not even talking about, you know, in this particular place, it's not even talking about Vaishnava. It's talking about people who are seeking for something which is transcendental. It is a sum total of Vaishnavas plus Mayavadis and Brahmavadis. All these people who are seeking at least something, they are talking transcendental, above the mundane. Even such people are very rare in this world. Out of those who yearn for transcendental, some become Mayavadis and run after impersonal liberation, and some come to Krishna consciousness, who are called as Vaishnava Abhas, which are in the initial stages of Krishna consciousness. So, people who are seeking transcendental, something transcendental, are very rare. Out of that, people who are coming to the path of being practicing Vaishnavas are even more rare. Out of those people who have come to the practice of Krishna consciousness, staying for many years doing such a practice is even more rare. Many people drop out after initial few years, saying this is too much, following the four regulative principles, 16 rounds, no Vaishnava Prad. It is easy to actually follow the four regulative principles and 16 rounds, but it is very difficult not to do Vaishnava Prad, especially blaspheming the holy devotees who are engaged in propagating the holy name. All of us struggle with this, right? For many, many years, right? So many problems, you know. So staying in Krishna consciousness, very, very difficult. And Prabhupada also said that even more rare are those devotees who are staying happy in Krishna consciousness. Right? That is even more rare. So Manushyanam Sahasreshu, that is why the Lord is saying, hardly one knows me in truth. Because we have to go through all this filtering to come to that platform where the Lord will raise his lotus feet and show us, okay, see. Right? Now, one may say that if bhakti, because we hear many times that, you know, bhakti has got many characteristics, and one of the highest characteristics of bhakti is Sandarananda Visheshatma. Bhakti can give us what is called as the supreme existential bliss. Now, if bhakti can actually has the power to give us that, then why don't we experience that? Because if we are experiencing supreme existential bliss, then we will be smiling at least in the classroom, right? Correct? But we are not experiencing this. That is because Srila Prabhupada explains that our devotional service is not pure. Our devotional service is mixed with the modes of material nature. Our devotional service is mixed with the mode of passion sometimes and in the mode of ignorance at other times. Now the question is, why is our devotional service mixed with the mode of passion and mode of ignorance? That is because our devotional service is simply mixed with material desires. Because where there is material desires, then there is the existence of the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. Where there are no material desires, there is no impact of modes of material nature. These material desires, though we are practicing Vaishnavas, are in the gross form or in the subtle form. Either they are already manifest outside, so the entire congregation knows about our material desires, or we are very sober externally, but internally we are Jwalamukhi, you know, we are burning inside with so many material desires, but externally Haribol Nandavat Pranam, like that. So these desires are there inside, deep inside the heart. So in this journey, which begins from faith of a devotee, Shraddha, then it leads to Sadhu Sangha, association of devotees, and then it leads to Bhajana Kriya, where most of us are, you know, practicing four regulative principles, struggling to practice the four regulative principles, struggling to chant 16 rounds or more attentively. So in this process of Bhajana Kriya, it is said that this process is very, very powerful. It is inherently very powerful. It has the ability to inspire the Lord to show His lotus feet to all of us. But because our bhakti is anishtitha, this is mentioned in devotional service, our bhakti is not steady. Steady bhakti is called as nishtitha bhakti, or on the platform of nishtha. But our bhakti is anishtitha, which is unsteady, which is why we are still not able to derive the happiness and experience of transcendental bliss, which this process is actually capable of revealing to us. So, many times what happens is, we come to bhakti and we expect that we will not have any problems now. Because initially in the science of self-realization programs or in the outreach programs of bhakti, you know, the Klesha Agni part is very much emphasized. That bhakti will give you relief from all distress. Don't worry. Right? But it is like the insurance policy, you know. The small lines below, we don't read. Yeah, no problem. Any problem, any illness you have, refund will be provided. Just pay the premium. So, Klesha Agni we talk about. But what we don't talk about in the opening classes is this Klesha Agni and the next aspect, which is Shubhada, manifestation of all auspicious qualities, only manifest fully at the stage of Nishtita Bhakti, not at the stage of Anishtita Bhakti. Fully, I'm saying. It's not that Klesha Agni does not happen. It is not that we don't get any relief from material distress, but we will get complete relief from material distress only when we follow the process of Nishtita Bhakti. Of course, someone can argue, that means what? People who are completely fixed Nishtita Bhakti, they will not have any problems. No material distress for them. Some of our spiritual masters who are already in Nishtita Bhakti, do they not have any material distress? Yes or no? So how do you understand then? So we have to understand that distress is something which is going on inside our consciousness. So we have to understand that when we come to Nishtita Bhakti, let's take a simple example. Let's say somebody is falling down. No, he is tripped from a hill and he is falling down. So 9.8 meters per second square is acting on that person. Free fall. Right? Now there is a branch which is available. The person immediately sees that branch and latches onto it. Now, when you have latched on to that branch, it is not that gravity now is not acting upon you. It just means that yes, gravity is all around you, but it is now not able to exert that influence which otherwise it will exert had you not held to that branch. So that is how we need to understand that it is not that the material world becomes a very enjoyable place for someone who is in Nishtita platform. It simply means that that distress does not affect or impede that person's pursuit of the absolute truth. That is called as relief from material distress. It doesn't impact. Maro bhi rakho bhi jo ichha tomar. That is what Bhakti Vinod Thakur says. He says, you treat me like anything. Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur went through so many distresses. But he says, okay, you can do whatever you want with me, my dear Lord, because at the end of the day, though this material world will give me all these, you know, kicks, for me, my mind is always fixed in you. So it doesn't matter. Because I have understood the material world is going to be like that. So internally, I am at peace. Externally, the distress may be coming on me, but I am not responding to the distress in the same way a anishtita bhakta is responding. So internally, I am blissful. Because I know that yes, this is the tests of the Lord, and these are opportunities for me to detach myself. And when we see all miseries as opportunities for detachment, then inside, deep inside the core of our heart, that distress does not affect us. Just yesterday only, one Mataji was talking to me. She has had a very hard time, in fact, she was talking to me and my wife. Recently, she had had a miscarriage. Yesterday only they were talking to us, Nam Navami evening. And that is very difficult for a lady actually. But this Mataji was telling me that, and this is not the first miscarriage. She has had a series since so many years it's been happening. She was saying that, Prabhu, I'm able to realize that, initially when it happened in the hospital, I was like, oh Lord, how can you do it to me again and again? But then immediately after that, I'm realizing that this is the result of my karma. Maybe so many things that I have done in the past. And immediately when I start thinking like that, then it no longer affects me. So I'm very peaceful now. So I thought this is a good learning, in fact. I said, thank you for sharing this with us. Because all of us, need such devotees to remind us, through their own example of how they are dealing with distress. So, bhakti has that potential to bring us out of our distress and also to bring in all our auspicious qualities in full, which the demigods have. That is called as Shubhada. But it does not happen to all of us because we are not fixed in our devotional service. Or we don't follow the prescription of devotional service as described by the physician. Who is the physician? Srila Rupa Goswami. What is his prescription for devotional service? Which is what Prabhupada mentions in this purport to today. What is Srila Rupa Goswami's prescription? That bhakti is anya abhilashita shunyam, jnana karmadi anavritam, anukulyena krishna anu silanam bhakti rutama. So that is his prescription for devotional service. And we don't follow that prescription. That is why we are not able to, though we are practicing devotional service, the Lord is not lifting his lotus feet and showing us. And only he is showing to exalted Vaishnavas. So, we have to understand this. Srila Rupa Goswami writes, when first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires. That is called as first class devotional service. One must be devoid of not only of all material desires, but one must be devoid of knowledge obtained by monistic philosophy and fruitive action. Jnana karmadi anavritam. The devotee must constantly serve Lord Krishna favorably. The word constantly is very important. Because as practicing devotees, we have to ask ourselves, are we constantly serving the Lord? No. Even when we are doing many, many projects, for example, when we are vested with some responsibility to do some activity on behalf of the movement, we will inevitably find that somewhere in executing that responsibility, we have forgotten the basics, right? Of why am I doing this activity? We forget that I am doing this activity for the pleasure of Lord Krishna. And we cannot do an activity for the pleasure of Lord Krishna if the devotees are displeased with that particular approach that we are taking to that activity. So we are not constantly serving the Lord. Yes, we are constantly in activities which are under the banner of Krishna consciousness. But actually are we constantly serving the Lord while performing those activities? Because the Lord is not result grahi like our bosses are in office. I don't care what you do, but I want this result. No, these are your KPIs. These are your service level agreements. No, the Lord is not about KPIs, key performance indicators. The Lord is not only looking at the results. That's why the Lord is called as Bhavagrahi Janardana. He is seeing the mood at all points in time, the mood in which we are doing that particular service. Okay, it may be any service that we are doing, but he is seeing the mood in which we are doing.
He's saying that in our service, how many Vaishnavas have got killed? And then we may offer something very nice to him. You know. For example, just an example, I may be doing so many services. For example, I'm doing, let's say, garland service. Okay. Example, I'm just saying example, please. What is the, because ultimately this garland is going to be offered to Lord Krishna. And Lord Krishna is Bhavagrahi Janardhana. So in the process of making that garland for the Lord, have I constantly served the Lord? At every point in time, what has been my thinking? Am I project oriented? Sometimes does my mind, am I serving my mind? These are the deviations. The mind will take us to so many other ways. No? The moment we start serving our mind, and then we are not serving Krishna. And then we will find that in our services, we will always have constant conflicts with devotees. And then when we have conflicts with devotees, the process of bhakti becomes less enjoyable. When the process of bhakti becomes less enjoyable, then we don't have a motivation to do that process properly anymore. And then we are sulking. When we sulk, we are not happy. And then, we cannot stay for long in the movement. Staying for long in the movement means what? Not 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. Staying for long in the movement means staying eternally in the movement. So you can imagine what a long movement it is. Because our existence is eternal. So we have to stay eternally in the Krishna consciousness movement. So therefore, that introspection is required. Or am I constantly serving the Lord? Or am I serving my mind also in between? Service to the Lord must be favorable as Krishna desires, he says. Now, if we dissect what Rupa Goswami is trying to say, he is saying that the Lord will not reveal his lotus feet to us if we, as long as we are in the consciousness of I want. That is why he starts the whole verse by saying Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. Anya Abhilasha. Abhilasha means desires. Anya means desires which are anything else other than for the pleasure of the Lord. Anya Abhilasha. So, this is, you can call it as the I want syndrome. Whatever activity when we are doing, we have to analyze within our hearts how much of this activity I am doing under the I want syndrome. I am doing this service because I enjoy this service. Again, who is the center of this service then? I. So, I want syndrome. So, he says that this is Anya Abhilasha. Not what Lord Krishna wants. Something which I want at the end of the day. Yes, it is still under Krishna consciousness. No doubt about it. But I am working under Krishna consciousness the way that I want. Of course, he also says, he doesn't only say Anya Abhilasha Shunyam. He says Anya Abhila Shita Shunyam. Why is the word that Sita added here? That is because Rupa Goswami recognizes there are certain desires which are inevitable, which are very integral to our material existence. For example, the desire for self-preservation. For example, if let's say devotees are going on a Sankirtan party, and some terrorist is coming with a gun and saying, now I am going to blow your head off. Okay. How dare you do this? No. And then the devotee is shouting, Lord Narsingha, please protect me. No. Please protect me. So who wants something? I want to be protected. Now, is it I syndrome? No. That's why the word Anya Abhila Shita is used. The word Sita means, Rupa Goswami says, yes, there are situations where the desire for self-preservation does not preclude you from pure devotional service. So we can still be a pure devotee as long as, you know, protecting the self doesn't become the primary driver for bhakti. Does it make sense? If we remember, a few days back, His Holiness Devamrit Maharaj had given a beautiful class in Mary Kehoe Center where he mentions devotees approach the Lord in four moods. Bhaya, Asha, Kartavya Buddhi and Rati or Prem, like that. So he said that many devotees approach the Lord out of bhaya. So initially also in Krishna consciousness, you know, we come, many of us come because of fear. That if we don't follow this, then we'll become a victim of our karmic bank balances. Right? And we will have eternal suffering because God knows what all we have done in the previous lifetimes. Right? So therefore initially we come out of bhaya. So the desire for self-preservation is, and when we get those reactions, for example, through some means, then sometimes we call out to the Lord, "Oh Lord, please protect me from this situation." You know, like that. So Rupa Goswami pardons that. He says that no problem. You know, as long if you are following sincerely the practice of bhakti, if you are facing some situation where you have to do self-preservation, if you call out to the Lord, that doesn't mean you are not under the realm of pure bhakti. As long as that doesn't become your driver for doing the bhakti. So we can't keep on doing bhakti, you know, approaching the Lord out of bhaya all the time and expect that He will show us His lotus feet at some point in time. Because that is not pure bhakti at all. So anya abhilasha. When bhaya becomes, you know, a motivator for bhakti, then it is anya abhilasha. Sometimes it is not bhaya. Sometimes it is asha. Asha means we come to bhakti with some hope. Usually to improve our material life. For example, many times people start coming to the process of bhakti. We have seen also people, you know, start coming to the home programs primarily so that it can improve their network. So they'll come, they'll say, "Oh, is it?" So, and we also sometimes tell them that, "Yeah, you can come, please come, you know. You come to the temple, come for the program, you can network with so many devotees." For example, someone is a C++ consultant. You know, he has come new to the temple, he's looking here and there. So, "Hey, hello, what's your name?" "Oh, I'm C++. So, he says, "Oh, yeah, come to the temple. You know, you'll meet so many C++ consultants. If we can tell him that you'll see the lotus feet of the Lord, he'll say, 'First, let me get a job. Then we will talk about the lotus feet.' Right? First, let me stand on my own feet." Correct? So, then we tell them that, no, you'll meet so many, you know, C++ consultants here. You know, you come, just come to the programs, have prasadam, you know, slowly you'll network also. So, yeah, this is a very good proposition, because when you come first time on a, you know, PR or whatever, you don't know whether to go left or right. Want to know which company to apply for, right? So then, this is like a breath of fresh air. Someone says that, "Oh, I care for you, come. You know, there are so many people who are like you, you know. People have come like you, you know, so please come." So this can be initial driver in devotional service. So it's coming with an ulterior motive, you know, into bhakti. Or for example, I remember one year or two years back, there was someone who came for the program, and then we never saw this person before. You know. So we asked, "Okay, tell us something about yourself. You know, we do this, you know, introduction in the programs." The person said, "I'm a dance teacher." You know, "Very good, very good. And I want to use this in Krishna consciousness." Now, apparently, it was not the first. She had come for the first time for the program, but I think she has heard some Saturday lectures. You know, so it was a very, you know, correct statement. You know, that I want to use this in Krishna consciousness. But over a period of time, when we saw, the person never took any interest in anything associated with the Navavidha Bhakti process. But all the person wanted to do was network and, you know, do this so that then it can be a initial Melbourne credentials on the CV, that "I have taught so many people this particular art form," so that then they can also go out and say that, I have heard about this person, I have taught here in Australia for so many years, like that. So people come with so many different intentions, ulterior motives, anya abhilashita. Now, as a devotee progresses through these initial stages, and even when the devotee comes to the intermediate stages of bhakti, where a devotee now is no longer in bhakti for these initial desires, I understood that the goal of life is Krishna, and, you know, this is the only hope for me in this lifetime. Bhakti is the only process. And I'm genuinely, the person is struggling now in Krishna consciousness. But because we are struggling doesn't mean we don't have material desires. Because we are struggling because of our material desires. Right? So material desires are there anyway. So then the concept of dovetailing starts. You know, dovetailing our aptitudes, our natures. This concept starts after that. So then the desires take a different dimension. Okay, say, okay, I'm struggling now in Krishna consciousness, but I have so many material desires. But I have heard that I can dovetail these desires in Krishna consciousness. So the same person, for example, who may have some fine arts, whether someone can paint very nicely, or someone can sing very nicely, someone can dance very nicely, someone can do so many things, they are now dovetailing these desires in Krishna consciousness. So in that sense, those desires are getting purified slowly and steadily. But again, this is an intermediate stage of dovetailing, because here again the I want syndrome is still there. I want to do the service of kirtan for the Lord, because I have got talent for singing, so I want to sing like that. And I'm in dovetailing, yeah, no doubt. I'm singing in a 12-hour kirtan. Instead of singing in a disco, I'm singing here. I'm dovetailing in Krishna consciousness. But still there is an I want here. It is not the concept of serving that is more important to us, but it is a particular service which we like to do. And we are doing that service in Krishna consciousness. So it is still devotional service. Yes, we are singing in the temple, but it is not Anya Abhilashita Shunyam till now. Now, the problem here, if we continue without genuinely endeavoring for Anya Abhilashita Shunyam, is that slowly as we do our services which we are expert in, then we will start getting recognition for those services. Oh, Prabhuji, you are the best singer in the temple. Oh, Prabhuji, you are the best. No, you are so good at giving class. Oh, Prabhuji, Mataji, you are the best in cooking and deity dressing. Never seen anyone like you, like that. Oh, Prabhuji, you are the best in management services, like that. So all these kind of, because we are dovetailing our natures in Krishna consciousness right now. But because we have certain aptitudes, definitely we will shine when we dovetail that in Krishna consciousness, some talents. And then that will bring us a lot of recognition. And that is in one sense the danger. Because once this recognition comes through our service, then what follows? Once we become recognized, what follows? Pride follows. And once pride follows, what else follows? Pride leads to the desire for controlling others. Now we want to control. Because now I am the Prabhu, everyone knows I am the best singer, so I need to get the opening slot, Prabhu. So you can't give anyone else. Prabhu, I am singing for the Lord. Please understand. Okay, so this is slightly, now that it's taking a different connotation now. The whole thing is now going somewhere else. Right? So then so excellence in that activity now starts becoming a hindrance if we are not conscious of what I am doing, why am I doing something. Srila Prabhupada, what a great achievement of Srila Prabhupada. He is the founder Acharya of ISKCON. Just imagine. What a big position that is, right? Founder Acharya of ISKCON. Whoever is a devotee today is because of Srila Prabhupada, right? I mean, in ISKCON, I'm saying. There are other devotees also, but right now, in the context of ISKCON, it's all because of Srila Prabhupada. He's a founder Acharya. Now, Srila Prabhupada taught us this Anya Abhilashita Shunyam by his own personal example. Several instances are there. I was reading a book called as Unspoken Obstacles on the Path of Bhakti by His Grace Purnachandra Prabhu. Very nice book. So he has very, very nicely dissected several aspects of how our mind can give us subtle instructions and deviate us always from the path of bhakti because of our position, power and so on, recognition and so on and so forth. So he gave the examples of Prabhupada. Some of them you already know. During the Amsterdam deity welcoming ceremony, when devotees were struggling, devotees did not know how to do a deity installation. Temple inauguration was there. Lord Jagannath had to be installed at that time. Okay, so first of all, the altar was not, the dimensions were not taken properly. Prabhupada heard some banging noise inside the altar. And when Prabhupada saw that, they were actually trying to push the Lord inside the by banging. So Prabhupada said, what is this nonsense is going on here? And then Prabhupada was very, already very upset. And Prabhupada came out. He said, where is the fruits? Where are the flowers? Where is the paraphernalia? And then one devotee said, yeah, I'm bringing. And then he went and he brought fruit salad. Prabhupada said, you brought fruit salad? You expect me to offer fruit salad in the yagya? So he was fuming. And when Prabhupada was, after some time, once Keshav Prabhu explained to us, when Prabhupada used to get extremely angry, first he'll yell, he'll shout, and then after a certain time he'll become quiet. His lips will start quivering. And then he'll stop talking anything, and his lips will quiver, and then he'll become quiet after some time, silent. That means he's very angry right now. Like that. So amidst all this, as Prabhupada was, fuming like this, one hippie was sitting behind, and he tapped Prabhupada. He said, what's the problem? Chant Hare Krishna. But you know what? I just put myself in this position, of course. We can't compare ourselves to Srila Prabhupada, but if I put myself in this position, if someone would have told me that when I was angry, I would have said, Prabhu, I know the philosophy. I've been coming here. So don't tell me, okay? No, that would have been my reaction. But Prabhupada didn't do that. Prabhupada said, yes, I agree. You're giving me the right instruction. And Prabhupada actually started chanting. The founder Acharya of ISKCON accepting a correct instruction from a hippie who has probably learned everything through a servant of Srila Prabhupada, that instruction. And he's giving it back to the founder Acharya. And the founder Acharya immediately accepting that instruction. Yes, you're right. So this is Anya Abhilashita, where that there is no pride, there is no consciousness of that I am the founder Acharya. Completely forgotten all that. He is the founder Acharya, but he is not carrying that consciousness also, that I have a position in ISKCON. And nobody can tell me anything because of that position of mine. So this is Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. Also, in New York airport, when devotees were doing, devotees had come in hordes and hordes to receive Srila Prabhupada, to see off Srila Prabhupada at the airport. I don't know whether it was a receive or see, but I believe it was a departure launch. And then the authorities were getting a bit upset, the airport authorities. And then they approached one devotee and said that, please, you tell so many people not to. It's not like today when nobody is allowed inside. From outside you have to wave, that's it. So there, at that time, people were allowed inside to see their near and dears off. So these people had swarmed the airport, and the authorities told, no, you have to get them out of here immediately because other passengers can't come in. So this devotee loudly, he was given some speaker or something, and he loudly said, all the devotees should now clear the space. But nobody was doing. But immediately as soon as he announced, Prabhupada first got up and started walking. And then the devotee said, Prabhupada, this instruction is not for you because you are traveling, so it's not for you. But Prabhupada took the first initiative. So immediately when he said, everyone has to get up and go, Prabhupada immediately, he didn't think, I'm the founder, Acharya, first let my disciples first do that, then I will, no. Immediately he was, so this spontaneously Prabhupada got up, which means at no point in time Prabhupada was ever thinking that he is the founder Acharya of ISKCON. He was not in that did not at any point of time prejudice his decisions which he used to make. Also, another pastime which is probably less known is when Prabhupada once was in Hyderabad in India. And devotees wanted to cook for Srila Prabhupada, but all of them are very scared. So in Hyderabad, they arranged a cook for Prabhupada. Now, Prabhupada was not aware initially, but because Prabhupada was a transcendental personality, immediately as soon as he ate, he realized something is wrong here. This has not been cooked by a devotee. So Prabhupada asked them, what is this? Who have you asked to cook? So the devotee said, actually, it is one Brahmana who is cooking. Finally, on investigation, they found out that this person was actually a sweeper who had cooking skills. Not that a sweeper cannot be a Brahmana. It doesn't mean that, but he was not practicing anything in Krishna consciousness. Nor was he, practicing Vedic principles. But doing sweeping as a profession, And he had organized him to cook. So Prabhupada was very upset with them. But Prabhupada, even when he was upset with them, he said, why was Prabhupada upset? Because it is disturbing the consciousness of the devotees. Not because how dare you ask a sweeper to cook for me. It is not from that point Prabhupada came. How we know that? Because Prabhupada, the first thing Prabhupada told them is that, you should have asked me, I would have cooked. He said, Now the founder Acharya is making this statement. You should ask me, I would have cooked. I'm very happy to cook. I would have cooked for all of you. Because Prabhupada now is, for Prabhupada calling himself as a Brahmana, is actually in one sense is humility, because the founder Acharya of ISKCON. But he is still coming to the platform saying that, okay, we are practicing devotee, so I'll cook. No, but devotee should cook, not a person who is not in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada taught us by his personal example how not to get trapped in all these, with all these designations that we acquire in Krishna consciousness. Because as long as these designations, position, power, these motivate us in bhakti, then the moment these are, we are stripped of these things, then what will motivate us in bhakti? Nothing. Right? All these things can go away. These designations can go away. Today I am somebody in the temple. Tomorrow I may be nobody in the temple. Or tomorrow I may go to a temple where I am a nobody. Right? You can say I was so and so in Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. But then there you are virtually a new person. Then how do you still be happy in Krishna consciousness? Right? So, this aspect is very important. Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. Only then we can derive that Sandarananda Visheshatma. Jnana Karmadi Anavritam. Philosophical interests or pursuits must not become more prominent than our pursuit of bhakti. Now this is very important, especially for those devotees who are engaged in services such as frontline preaching or teaching and education in ISKCON. So it is very important, because many times there is, you know, this obsession, too much obsession with philosophy, getting more and more understanding of the philosophy. Because Krishna conscious philosophy, no doubt about it, it is very enjoyable, because it's very deep. It is the highest philosophy in this earth, in this universe, right? In existence. This is the highest philosophy. So therefore, sometimes we may find that as devotees who are engaged in this service, we may get more and more philosophically inclined. So even when, you know, if we see the pattern of what kind of lectures we hear, especially if you are in these fields, preaching, teaching, education, etc., we may find that we are hearing more and more lectures which are philosophical oriented. And we are hearing less and less lectures which are pertaining to the leelas of the Lord. So we have to be very careful that even within devotional service, we are having a healthy mix of philosophy plus leela in our hearing. Because we become what we hear at the end of the day. It's a very, in fact, hearing is the most important component of our bhakti. If we don't hear, then there's nobody to tell us where we need to go. So, too much obsession with philosophy is also against, acts contrary to pure devotion. And karma anavritam, not only jnana anavritam, karma anavritam. Engaging in ordinary social or mundane religious activities, along with the practice of bhakti. To such an extent that now they start overshadowing our hearing and chanting. So that is very dangerous. For example, many times devotees also acquire certain skills. For example, skills which are required to serve other devotees. For example, some devotee may be a very good astrologer. But at the end of the day, those astrological commitments take so much of time in our lives that then we are rotating our beads at 10 o'clock in the night. And we call that as chanting. So therefore we have to be very careful that that hearing and chanting should not become a tertiary pursuit for us. Just because we are engaged in other services, albeit under Krishna consciousness. Because it is our hearing and chanting which contribute to 99% of our progress in bhakti. The quality of our hearing, the quality of our chanting. That is very important. And Adi Anavratam. Jnana or Karma Adi Anavratam. Which talks about, the Adi talks about things like renunciation, yoga, other yogic practices. These may be undertaken, no doubt about it, but they must always remain secondary to the process of pure bhakti. So Prabhupada is emphasizing on these points. He is telling us that in his purport that Brahma was able to see the lotus feet of the Lord because he was very careful. That his whole approach was one of sincere meditation aimed at being empowered to be able to do a service such that his activities are in deference to the Lord's instruction or to the Lord's desire. So one is, there is a Lord's desire. I'm aligning myself with the Lord's desire, first of all. And for aligning myself with the Lord's desire, I'm praying that I be empowered so that the Lord is pleased. I'm praying very sincerely and in a humble mood of service. So Srila Prabhupada is bringing out that point very nicely in this purport, which says, the Lord showed his lotus feet by raising them. Because Brahma had this mood, the Lord showed him that. His lotus feet are the source of all awards achieved by devotional service, free from material contamination. Such awards are for those who worship him in pure devotion. So unless one comes to the platform of pure devotion, then one cannot get this award. I'll stop here and ask if there are any questions, corrections, comments. The question has a, you know, is a bit paradoxical. You know, what if I struggle with a service and therefore I say no? The moment we say no, we are no longer struggling with the service. Only when we say yes and do the service, then there is a struggle. Well, saying no means I am no longer struggling. I have already said a no to that service. Of course, I still understand the question that yes, what if we are struggling in a particular service? Now, struggle in a particular service can come because of different reasons. One reason could be that we don't have an aptitude for that service. For example, you know, I don't have very much of an aptitude for in the kitchen. Okay, so if I'm asked to cook or something, khichdi, then naturally I don't have that aptitude. You know, you will find that I'm struggling here and there. You know, even in my house kitchen, I'm struggling. Half the time my wife is upset with me whenever I go inside. I do some mess. Okay, because it is just not in my nature to do that activity. I've tried sometimes, but it doesn't work with me. Okay, so we can struggle because we either don't have an aptitude for that, or we don't have a talent, you know, in that particular service, or many times that is not the problem, because we cannot get along with other devotees with whom we are rostered for in that service. That is also possible. Prabhu, I don't want to do that service because I don't want to get along with that. I don't want to work with the devotee. You know, we go through this syndrome also. It is very rare that it is because of physical inability we cannot do, you know, service. But that is also possible. We may struggle because we are physically not capable of lifting those huge pots, you know. Because I remember, I started my services in Toronto, you know, in my kitchen services, where my service was only pot washing for 2 years. And I remember those days because I didn't have a back problem. I was able to do those services, you know, for many, many months at end, you know. But I'm not able to do that as of now. So sometimes maybe it's physical services may limit. But then again, the question is, can we just say that I can't do this service and therefore I will never do this service? What tomorrow if we are asked to do that service? Yes, in this temple, for example, the temple has been kind enough to, for example, to give me a service which I like to do. But tomorrow I may not be in Melbourne. Tomorrow I may go to any other temple and that temple may require me to do some other service. Again, I may have to do pot washing there. Who knows? Because that may be the need of the hour for the movement at that point in time. So then, obviously, then one has to also understand, or for example, even deity worship, what to speak of pot washing, because many times deity worship requires us to be in certain postures which are not very, if we don't have a strong back, then we can't do those services. So sometimes because of that, we may avoid doing certain services which require us to, you know, which is physically inconvenient. So there are two ways. One is saying no to the service, which is a easiest thing to do, then we are no longer struggling. But struggle also means that yes, I have to do this service, I am not able to do it today, but then it is the Lord which is giving me a service. Maybe it is a need of the hour for the temple, which is why I am asked to do the service. So then therefore the devotee can take some very practical measures to do that. Then if back is the problem, then go to some training program where you can strengthen your back, do some exercise, you know. So that is a positive approach why I don't want to do that service. If relationships with other devotees is the problem, then again we have to consult a senior devotee, because we inherently, everyone thinks that relationship problems only exist because of the other devotees. We hardly blame ourselves that I can also be a problem. You know, my mind can be one of the problems. Why I'm having relationship problems with other devotees? So then it's a question of introspection. Okay. And if we believe that our mind is always cheating us by giving us congratulatory messages, then it is high time that we go and seek validation of that with other senior devotees who we trust. So then we can go to other devotees and say that, look, no, I have this problem, I need help. So it is very situation dependent. So doing all these activities, you are not actually doing the service now, but you are doing that introspection to be able to do that service. You are doing that exercise, physical exercise, to be able to do that service. That is the struggle in Krishna consciousness. Does it mean? So we are struggling to be able to do that service. And when the Lord sees that sincere struggle, then He will reward us. That in fact, all these surrounding activities which we do, that also is bhakti only now. Now no longer that exercise is something which is like the mundane, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger going to, you know, build a pump up his body, you know, so that he can do some model. No. It's not that kind of bodybuilding. Here it is bhakti yoga. So as long as you are in that gym, then you are doing bhakti yoga, because the goal of that is eventually to get empowered to do a particular service so that it is pleasing for the Lord. Here see, actually, what is Brahma doing? Look at Brahma. What is he doing? Is he doing a spiritual activity? In one sense, if you see it, he is creating the material world. He is dealing with the material energy. But why is he doing it? Because that is his duty. As of now, Lord has given him that duty. He is not saying, oh, why Loknath Goswami, has been given higher duty to boil milk, in Yashoda mother's kitchen. And why I have been asked to come and make this material world. Everyone is anyway cursing me, including the gopis, that you have given us these eyelids. So he is actually becoming a bad man here. But he is still doing it. And that's why the Lord is rewarding him. He may have imperfectly created this material world. But then the Lord says that, no, you are sincerely doing that. And you are sincerely struggling to do that. In fact, Brahma also prays here that, Lord, you have given me this. If I end up doing a very nice job of this, then I may become proud. So please protect me from that also. That also Brahma is praying. So the Lord is already seeing that sincerity in Brahma. Does it make sense? I don't know whether I answered your question or not. Anything else? So there are two things which I also thought about that line, and I was scared that nobody asked me this question and you asked me. Okay, but this is my understanding. I don't know, but you yourself can validate this, my understanding, and as well as other devotees who are here. One is, the fact that Brahma went through the lotus stem. That is one way of, he penetrated through that, and then he went and tried to search the Lord. That is one. But again, that was a failure. Brahma could not see the Lord. So here, where Prabhupada is saying, after penetrating for millions of Lord, Brahma could understand the transcendental form of the Lord as Sri Krishna, saying. So by that penetration, by that physical penetration through the stem, he could not actually. So my understanding was that it is the tapa which Lord Brahma did. It is penetrating into his own super soul, penetrating into his own consciousness, and he is meditating on the super soul for instructions, for guidance on what I should be doing. And because of that sincerity, then he was rewarded with the transcendental form of the Lord, which is coming in the earlier section. So that was my understanding of that penetration. Penetrating into our own consciousness, penetrating, meditating on the Lord, penetrating into the real cause of all causes, penetrating into the basic questions of what is the goal of life, why am I here, why am I sitting in this lotus flower, who is the creator, what does he want out of me, delving into those things. So that is what I understood through that word penetrating. I don't know whether I'm, you can correct me. Thank you, Guru. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you. Okay. It's 9:09 now, so I'll stop here. Granthat Srimad Bhagavatam ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada ki Jai.